Broadcast. We're having a fantastic day wherever you are, whatever you may be doing. It is a wonderful day in America. It is because, once again, the electoral process has made its way through the electorate, and now we put things in the hands of the Electoral College. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Yesterday was, in fact, Election Day here in the United States of America, and even though it took way into the wee hours of the morning to make the final determination as far as who actually had enough electoral votes, at the end of the day, well, technically, at the beginning of today,
turns out that I really don't know how to have love, how to let love go. Fell into a really bad place, saying what we can so that we feel safe. Woke up on the floor. Time begs for more.
All right, I'm back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for staying with me for that very short break. All right, so here's what we're looking at. Donald Trump has won the election. He got the correct number of electoral votes offered by said states to become the next president of the United States, should those people who go to the Electoral College actually vote in accordance to how they're supposed to. That's not the part that concerns me, by the way. I mean, it's always a possibility that the Electoral College can do anything. In fact, twice in American history, I think the Electoral College did something different than what the election actually resulted. So even then, it doesn't happen often. I hate hyphenated. I still use it on occasion because sometimes there's simply not a better way. But I hate doing it. The bottom line is taxpayer dollars are being spent. Donald Trump has expressed that he believes, special shout out to Mary, who just joined us in the chat room. Hey, Mary. Glad to see you. He has expressed multiple times, even within the last few weeks, that they do a lot of good work. Which means, for the most part, Donald probably doesn't know what they really do. He sees press releases and figures that's enough. I mean, it comes down to this. Donald Trump has, on multiple occasions, expressed Democratic leanings. And I think the current friendliness from Barack Hussein ala Akbar Obama and the lovely concession speech that was given by Hillary, I think is probably all part of the party having decided that they think they can probably manipulate Donald into doing things more like what they would like. Every time I hear the phrase repeal and replace, it drives me nuts, because what are we talking about now? The Affordable Health Care Act. Why are we talking about the Affordable Health Care Act? Because this bill is set to completely decimate a lot of Americans who are seeing the policy rates double again this year, or like in my case, I didn't sign up, but I still had to make sure that my wife and my daughter had insurance. So I have them on a policy. And I refused as a matter of principle, and I wasn't going to back out on that principle. But at the same time, options were limited. Well, I'm found the best policy that I could for them through Blue Cross Blue Shield, who, oh, by the way, is pulling out of Tennessee. They're not going to have any policies in the exchange available in the state of Tennessee now. So now not only do I not have to worry about doubling of a policy, I have to worry about trying to find a completely new policy through a new company if I'm going to keep them insured. And in all honesty, right now, from everything I've seen, I have to admit I haven't done much research there yet. I need to. But from what I have looked at to this point, I don't feel particularly hopeful that it's going to work out. But here's the thing. This is something that the federal government has no business being involved with. So it should be repeal, and that's the end of it. If you want to pass some federal legislation involving regulations on insurance providers, that's all well and good. But ultimately, like we've said probably hundreds of times by now here on this show, if you really were concerned about the cost of healthcare for the American citizen, you don't start with insurance anyway, and you sure don't stop with insurance. There are a lot of common sense practices involving insurance that you could do, but you attack it at its base. You start with the expense of getting trained medical professionals where they can actually provide you their services. It's an expensive process if you want to become a doctor or a nurse or a litany of specialized technicians, that whether it be a radiologist or whatever type of healthcare technician you're talking about. I mean, there's too many to list, and I'm not going to sit here and make a list. Some of these things you can get reasonable training, or you can spend a short amount of time in school and you're not spending an arm and a leg, but those people are also not the primary cost involved with your health care. The development of drugs, the development of new machines and equipment to better diagnose and better treat you, all of these things are places where the actual expense of health care bubble up. You could start and focus in those areas, and you'd go much further towards addressing the issue of the cost of quality health care in the United States. If you want to include insurance in your efforts, then you attack state-to-state portability. You help break down some of these barriers that are in place in some states that practically give one or two companies a monopoly, because somebody somewhere knew the right person or paid the right kickback. Oh no, did I let the cat out of the bag? There's been corruption in our governments even before the Clintons? Yeah, afraid so. The concern is, in their haste to appease certain people on both sides of the aisle, that while they will look to repeal Obamacare, that they're not going to pay quite as much attention as they should to what they're going to use to replace Obamacare. Like I said earlier, there are legitimately some people who have been helped by the Affordable Health Care Act. But I, again, dare say that throughout the nation, you probably would be hard-pressed to find more than 1,000 people that that's actually legitimately true for. But here's something else. I still, for all my concerns and my fears that Donald Trump is more of a Democrat that ran as a Republican than he is an honest-to-goodness conservative guy. Okay, let's face it. We know he's not conservative. He has tapped into some conservative ideas that helped him win the primary. But generally speaking, he's not a conservative, not fiscally, not socially, not in any way that I know that's actually even meaningful as far as being the president of the United States. But he still, he says these things sometimes, and it makes me think, oh my gosh. So I'm hoping that he proves me wrong on these, and I'm hoping he puts these aside, and I am hoping that he in fact does what he says he was going to do. Hope that the Republicans, especially the establishment Republicans, will work with him and will actually get some work done and find a way to get around Harry Reid and his temper tantrum that he's been throwing since Judge Garland has been denied an up and down vote. I hope that Donald Trump can actually be a catalyst for positive change. Now, like I said, once the Electoral College has, once they have had their meeting and they get together and they pass, they vote, and Donald Trump is then named as the winner of the Electoral College vote, then I'll start referring to him as President-elect. And at that point, I hope that then President-elect Trump will be everything that folks like Ken Crow and his people hope he turns out to be everything that they was and then some. I hope that he is the kind of president that we can be proud to have. I want him who had the rest of the world slightly afraid of us, but completely respecting us. I don't want people like Putin taking one look at the White House and instead of thinking twice about his next decision, just chuckling and moving forward, whatever it may be. I don't want leadership of ISIS plotting against the states, knowing that they're going to be easily infiltrating our borders because we're actually going to pay to bring them here. I want to see a return to common sense. So I know. Tim, what are you thinking? That's too much to ask, no matter who gets elected. And maybe so. And I've lamented the fact more than once leading up to election night that it's going to be an uphill climb for Trump to do anything on his own regardless, because there's a lot of Republican establishment types willing to forgive. They are certainly not going to forget. He has upset their apple cart, toppled it over completely. But there are some things that I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to him proving me wrong. And I hope he does. I really do. Because I want an America that's back on track. I want an America where it doesn't matter what skin tone we are, that we can meet out somewhere in public and we can get along, that we can work together side by side, that we can hang out together, that we can be in the same public place, that we can be in the same schools, that we can have the same expectations of how we are treated by others around us, the same expectations of opportunity for success, and the same expectations for treatment when we break the law. I want an America that can once again be that shining city on the hill that Ronald Reagan talked about. We don't get there by accident, and we don't get there because of just one person. But one person keeping their promises and working hard can go a long way towards getting us there, especially if those promises were the right promises. Do we have to have a wall on the southern border in order to fix what's wrong with our immigration? No, not necessarily. I still wouldn't mind one, and I think he needs to build one because he promised it. And, well, because Congress actually already okayed it and allocated money for it, and then it just never got built. Surprise, surprise. Trump is not the solution, but he can be part of everyone pulling together and working towards the solution. I pray, and I started praying last night right before I dozed off, and it's going to be my prayer from now until it's no longer pertinent, but I pray that, that Donald Trump and his advisors and his staff and Mike Pence, who actually I don't think I need to pray the same thing for him because I think he demonstrates it quite nicely on his own. I think Mike Pence actually is a man of faith and a pretty good example of the kind of guy that we should have as a president. But I pray that he will find in his heart both courage to face against the obstacles that will stand in his way, the wisdom to navigate them clearly, and the peace to forgive his political adversaries and to forgive those who have spoken against him so that he can focus on moving forward. Some people are never going to get on board. Some people are going to continue to be never Trumpers. Some of them are going to continue to be loyal Democrats, which in their mind they think equals we have to oppose everything Republican. But a loyal Democrat isn't opposed to the Republicans. A loyal Democrat is someone who wants what's best for America. That's a lesson the Republicans need to hear too, because a loyal Republican isn't someone who's loyal to the party without question and without thought. A loyal Republican is someone who's loyal to America, to your constituents first, and to the greater good of all second, and all in service to God and your fellow man. It's called public service for a reason, and that reason is you're supposed to be serving the public, not yourself, not the agenda of someone who's going to pay you money, but the public. And we are all, each and one, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, whatever, we're all better off when things are better here economically. Quick shout out to Larry over at the Prime Directive. Glad to see you hopping into the chat room. Welcome. Hope you're doing well, Larry. Whether or not you supported Trump, whether or not you supported Ted Cruz in the primaries and couldn't bring yourself to support Trump after that, whether you are a Marco Rubio fan, whether you were a Rick Perry fan, I know, no matter who. The time now is to put aside those lesser things and understand that the work ahead is in saving the republic. And we've all got some work to do. We've got a generation of millennials coming up that are against capitalism. That's why they're embracing communism. That's why Bernie Sanders did as well as he did. That's why Jill over at the Green Party did as well as she did. And she did fairly well for a Green Party candidate. Jill Stein, we have gotten just enough votes in a couple of those key states to have prevented her from winning. That could have been the difference. But whether you supported Jill Stein, whether you supported Gary Johnson, whether you supported Evan McMullen, whether you supported Daryl Castle, it doesn't matter. What matters is if you were involved and you got involved and you supported someone real, great. Congratulations. You were a part of what makes this nation great and special. But the part that really makes it special is that at this point, after the Electoral College meets and they make it official, then we go back to all being Americans. There's been a divisiveness that has existed for too long, and I pray that we can move past that because we're going to need to. And it's not going to be easy either. Case in point. Well, it seems like some people can't leave things alone. Some people have to immediately point out the negatives and then try to go back to the playbook, the good old progressive playbook that just does not change ever. One such person, hey, congratulations, Van Jones. If for some reason you missed it, Van Jones, while on CNN, was giving his little speech. Now, I'm pretty sure most of my regular listeners are familiar with the name Van Jones. I know for a fact Larry's familiar. I'm pretty sure Mary, I think you probably know a little bit, or you've at least heard his name. But for those of you who may not, and I have talked to a couple of people today who had no idea who Van Jones is. Van Jones is a former Obama advisor. He was one of the czars early on. I forget exactly which one now. He was a founding member of the think tank that did most of the writing of the Affordable Health Care Act. He actually ended up only having to be distanced from by the Obama White House because he was an open 9/11 truther, meaning he was one of the people that believed that 9/11 is an inside job and that it was actually George W. Bush in particular that had it done. And he said as much more, and he hasn't backed off from that either, even though he knows it costs him political points. And, you know, as far as that's concerned, I'll tip my hat to him. If he really believes that to be the case, then he should not let political expediency change it. At any rate, he's been doing a lot of stuff for CNN and MSNBC since his dismissal from the czar post. I'm thinking he was the green job czar. Maybe. I can't remember. If one of you guys remember, especially Larry, if you remember, type it in the chat room real quick and remind me. I think it was the Green Jobs Czar, the Green Czar. It was something like that. speaking of czars, look at the money we'll be saving. That's a great point, Mary. Excuse me. I'm coughing up a lung here. Been under the weather a lot here lately. Had a stomach bug that was going around, and now I've got this, this respiratory thing that just won't let me go. I know I've had a bit of a cough for a while now, but this is unrelated. At any rate, during CNN's election night coverage, former Obama advisor Van Jones argued that the 2016 election was, quote, a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president, in part. Jones said, quote, this was many things. This was a rebellion against the elites. True. It was a complete reinvention of politics and polls. It's true. But it was also something else. We've talked about race. We've talked about everything but race tonight. This was a white lash. This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president in part. And that's the part where the pain comes. And Donald Trump has a responsibility tonight to come out and reassure people that he is going to be the president of all the people who he insulted and offended and brushed aside. When you say you want to take your country back, you've got a lot of people who feel that you're not represented well either. But we don't want to feel that someone has been elected by throwing away some of us to appeal more deeply to others. So this is a deeply painful moment tonight. I know it's not just about race. There's more going on than that, but race is here too. We've got to talk about it. Now, obviously, parts of this were edited and left out. And for those of you who are listening live, you might want to hop into the chat room real quick because Mary just posted a Wikipedia link to Van Jones. So you can see the information of the man's resume. Now, here's what bothers me about this, because, the accusation of racism against Donald Trump has been ludicrous, and we've talked about that. Nearly 40 years in business, and not once has he actually been legitimately accused of racism. There's this one charge, one thing floating around that supposedly he was involved with a whites-only community, blah, 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 blah. But there's literally dozens of other occasions where he has actually opened up clubs that were whites only said, no, look, this is the way it's going to be. You want my money here? You want this? This is how this goes. The man has never been legitimately accused of racism before, ever. As a man who does real estate development in the New York area, He cares about budgets. He cares about schedules because that's where profitability comes from. And he doesn't care what skin tone you are if you're getting the work done that he needs done, period. That's not racism. That's capitalism. And Donald Trump is a capitalist. Pretty good at self-promotion, too, although the method he uses leaves about a 50-50 sway in his past. Here's the thing about what Van Jones is really doing. Here's what he's really saying when he did this. And I may talk about this again later this week, because right now this is one of the leading contenders for the outrage of the week that we'll be talking about Sunday. And actually, speaking of Sunday, please tune in early. I will be joined by John Lofgren during the top of the show. May have a few other guests. Have not confirmed anything yet, so I'm hopeful. But at least for right now, John Lofgren is from. He will be on this Sunday. So tune in right at the top of the show, 3 p.m. Eastern. But what Van Jones is doing is he's once again fanning the flames of racial division, which these folks feel like they've got to have. And unfortunately, if they can't keep us divided and can't keep us fighting amongst ourselves, they don't have very much reason to continue. Their policies don't stand up. Quick shout out to Kel Fritzy, who's just joined us in the chat room. Hey, Kel, how you doing? So we've got to force this division. So he's fanning the flames. But he's also doing something else that I haven't heard anybody else say yet. He's positioning himself in front of the public in a fashion where he can try to gain some of that millennial support that Hillary just couldn't get. I think Van Jones is thinking seriously about, if not 4 years from now, maybe 8 years from now, running for president. I think he's doing exactly what it is that he thinks he needs to do to continue to appeal to the group that he has been appealing to for a while. Van Jones wants to help the progressive movement by keeping us separated among racial lines, but he's also testing the waters a bit. Don't be surprised if, while Van Jones, of course, was an Obama advisor, was one of the czars for a short time, don't be surprised if you don't start hearing his name again quite a bit, because there's been just about enough time for the majority of America to forget that he is, in fact, a 9/11 truther, that he is, in fact, one of the main people behind the writing of the Affordable Health Care Act, that he's heavily involved with progressive think tanks diabolically coming up with one policy and potential act of litigation every single day to try and take more and more control of your day-to-day life. Quick shout out to Shadow Warrior, who's also joined us in the chat room. Welcome to the show. 4tunately, when I did have a conversation with a couple of people today about the Van Jones remarks, they hadn't seen them. They came across them later in the day and asking about it. It's like, had no idea who the guy was. So I had the unique pleasure of informing them a little bit about who Van Jones is and what he's done in the past. But this is someone who is sensitive to race relations. At the same time, expressed the same racial fatigue that I think a lot of people here in the States are experiencing. We're tired of hearing how bad race relations are. We're tired of thinking we can't trust our neighbors, the people we got along with before Obama became president. We'd like to see normalization. I mean, it's sure, race relations still wasn't perfect before Obama took office, but they were a heck of a lot better. There's no question. You can't right perceived wrongs by taking it 180 degrees the other direction. And that's what this administration has done. They have performed acts of reverse racism time and time and yet time again. The Justice Department became the Social Justice Department, or as most of the people I know refer to as the Injustice Department, because there was no efforts to enforce laws, only to punish people who didn't agree with them politically, whether it was through the IRS, all those Tea Party groups that just couldn't get their tax-exempt status, or whether it was whistleblowers who wanted to tell the truth about what happened in Benghazi, or wanted to tell the truth about what was going on with Obamacare before it was rammed down our throats. The bureaucracies of this government have been turned into weapons, and that has to be reversed too. If Donald Trump is the man that he claims to be, and I hope he is, he will fight tooth and nail to fix those things. That is, after all, the role of a public servant, to do the work of the people. Came across an interesting article today, and I will read it momentarily, but the conversation in the chat room is getting interesting, and it usually does once we get four or five people in there going. Mary's expressed some of the same concerns I've had about Trump in the past, and she's afraid that Trump will grow the government. You know, we want smaller government. We want limited government. We don't want anarchy. We want limited government. Of course, Kel's asking what she thinks is next for Hillary. Now, while if Hillary was almost anyone else, it would unquestionably, undoubtedly be at the very least probation after a conviction for mishandling of classified information. The way the law, the way the statute reads is you don't have to prove that there was intent, just gross negligence. And that was practically said by FBI Director Comey during his testimony in front of the different committees. Gross incompetence. Well, is that criminal? In this case, yes, it is, because that's the way the law is written. Not that that's going to change. Now, when we have the inauguration and then we get a new attorney general installed, it'll be interesting to see if Donald keeps his promise to go after Hillary then. I don't think he intends to, though. And I think he'll use the guise of, we have to move forward and we have to make peace in order to accomplish our goals. I think that'll be the excuse. And it may not even be without merit, per se. But that is, again, one of those promises I think he really needs to keep. If at all possible, he needs to convict Hillary Clinton. And you know, if she gets the same kind of deal that General Petraeus got when he faced this, basically would be the same charges, then so be it. But at least she went to court and she got convicted, and that's on her record. We've got to hold people accountable. Law and order has to be established, and no one, even the Clintons, should be above the law. Mary also says that he should fix DHS. Yeah. The Department of Homeland Security does need some fine tuning. I don't know that that's his area of expertise, so I don't know how much I would expect him to be able to accomplish in that department, though, Mary. If he gets the right advisors in the place, then maybe you'd expect a little more. But you're absolutely right. We need to stop having airport security grouping children and elderly and then start grouping anyone in a burqa. That is the higher risk people. And I know it's terribly insensitive, and I'm a bigot for saying that. But there's a reason why we say it, because that's where we have to be more concerned. I don't see many 3-year-old children from Ohio planting shoe bombs on airplanes, but people riding from countries where people tend to wear a burqa, yeah, that's where this kind of terrorism normally is sprung at. And, you know, surprisingly, just about anybody can be hiding under a burqa. The presumption that that's a woman under there is one that you would understandably fall for, but in the modern world, one should never assume anything. And Mary also rightly points out that profiling has worked wonders for Israel. And before it became such a big deal here, profiling worked very well here and would work again. You just have to be careful about who you're profiling, and you can't make it completely random. And we need to change laws. I mean, it's a slippery slope, and I understand why people are reluctant to get into it, because you don't want to get to a point where, what's the best way to put it? You don't want to get to the point where you are legitimately discriminatory. I mean, you don't. It's nobody wants to be discriminated against, and believe it or not, despite what certain progressives are more than happy to tell you, even us conservative folks don't really want to be discriminatory towards anybody. We want the government small enough that they're not up in our business, and then typically we want to be left alone to live our lives and do what we can do, use our talents to make our living, and choose who's in our circle of friends, and choose how we spend our money, and choose what charities we give to. And we will give to charities. And most of us tend to be churchgoers. So most of us are paying tithings too, which is also private sector funds that are going to do good works that the government's still bound and determined that it's their job to go do. We want the choice. We want that level of control. We want to know that our dollars are our dollars and they're being spent the way we want them spent, which takes us back to the Planned Parenthood issue. Parenthood gets more than enough money donated to them by private sector companies. They don't need taxpayer dollars. And even if they did, as long as any one of their locations is providing an abortion service, technically they shouldn't be eligible to receive taxpayer dollars anyway. I don't care what kind of fancy accounting tricks you're playing to say, well, those dollars never get spent doing that. Bull. If those dollars are being used to keep the water and the lights turned on in the building where the abortions are happening, then they're being spent to help pay for the abortions. It doesn't matter how you write it up in your budget. It doesn't matter what accounting tricks you're going to use. You're spending the money that way. That's one of the places where I'm afraid Donald's going to fall short on. He still says, well, they do a lot of good work. No. Even if they did all the things they claim to do in their press releases, they're still a eugenicist organization that was based on the extermination of black people. Hello, pay attention. There's a reason why they're placed strategically where they're at. And Mary's right. He said that he believes what he was told. And in that case, yeah, it is a case where he's just been told that. But again, Donald Trump has run in mostly Democratic circles for most of his life. And most Democrats believe it because they've never bothered to face the truth. that's one of the reasons why they face the issues that they do. It's one of the reasons, like, somebody like Van Jones can rise to a position of power or authority, be part of an administration, run a think tank, give college lectures. It's one of the reasons why we have lists, and I know we've all been seeing it on social media today, various celebrities who said that they would leave the country if Trump won. Well, I'm personally volunteering in any of my off time. If any of these folks on any of these lists need some help packing, I'll show up. I'll try to get some of my friends to show up. We'll help get you out of here, especially folks like the Reverend, not Jesse Jackson, but Mr. Al Sharpton. Excuse me. I was kind of hitting my Jesse. I was heading towards my Jesse Jackson voice. I needed to back it up. Reverend Al Sharpton. It is absolutely mind-numbing. And of course, you know, we've all been kind of getting a chuckle and laughing and doing the in your face, but we've literally already had calls to impeach Trump. And this is coming from folks who don't realize that you can't actually be impeached until you become the president. And that hasn't happened yet. But these are angry mobs in the West Coast. We saw schools where students staged walkout protests. Some of these were high schools. It's like, you know, I can see it happening in college. But when high schools start letting kids have walkouts, that poses a pretty big risk to minors, and they're responsible for that. They need to take better control. Despite all that, you know, France made a few headlines today talking about how they're planning on getting tough with Trump. They're concerned and they're going to make sure that they do what they need to do to protect their citizens. Come on. How is Trump a threat to them? He's not. If he stands up and does what's right, then guess what? That's still what's right for the people of France, just as much as it's right for the people of America. Very rarely is there any Western civilization that something good is going to happen to one that is going to affect another one in a negative way. Unless whatever that's good is happening is the direct result of taking something from them, resource-wise or cash or what have you. At the end of the day, ordinarily, if you see something good happening in one Western-cultured nation, then that goodness permeates to the rest of these Western civilizations. They say, hey, that's working pretty well. You know, California legalized marijuana today, not today, but yesterday during their election process. Residents in California voted to legalize recreational marijuana. They'll be opening up markets to the nearly 40 million citizens living in the state. Anybody over the age of 18 can buy it. Or actually, it might be 21. Let me double check that number. This note here says 18, but I don't think that's right. So let me double check that real quick, because I definitely don't need to be called out for missing a detail like that. Give me a second and I'll have that here. In the meanwhile, you know, that actually in another election cycle, that would be a pretty big deal, because it's something that's been on the ballot before and has not managed to pass previous. Well, it's a pretty big deal. And yeah, actually, I was correct. The note I had here was incorrect. It is anyone over the age of 21 to possess 1 ounce of marijuana and to grow up to 6 plants in their home. There's a 15% tax on all marijuana sales, and they expect that that could possibly bring into the state a little bit more than $1 billion in annual revenue. I guess that's based primarily on what they've seen happen in Colorado. I'm not sure where their numbers are set. Excuse me. But one of the things that I found most interesting, I had to share. I came across it and I have to share. This isn't it, but it's related to the California story real quick. There's a hashtag today that I don't know if you guys noticed going around, but evidently with Donald Trump winning the presidential election, there's a lot of Californians that had this little thing going on, this kind of a brainwave that just ran rampant on Twitter today. The idea, of course, is why not break away from the rest of the U.S. and go it alone? After all, the state probably grows enough food to sustain itself. It has the sixth largest economy in the world, and it just passed its recreational marijuana use. It doesn't really need those other states under a Trump presidency, does it? There's actually a call. They're calling it Cal Exit. And now, obviously, it's not going anywhere, and it's mostly a bunch of tree huggers and ultra-leftists that can't deal with the fact that, well, that Trump actually won the election, you know, they stuff. But actually calling for that, and I really, really, I can't help but think that that's just funny. Anyway, I've got the article now. Now, you guys probably are familiar with Matt Walsh. And if you're not, he writes a blog post, and he actually has a podcast now available. He works through the Blaze, so he's associated loosely with Glenn Beck. But don't let that hold you. Matt's a more of a kind of an in-your-face free thinker. Doesn't have that same, I don't know, how would you describe Glenn Beck best? Self-righteous, over-the-top kind of, I'm going to stand on principles, which actually sounds a lot like what I say a lot, so maybe I shouldn't be so hard on it, but I think that's the typical description. Matt Walsh, very different, but Matt wrote something today that showed up on the Blaze, and I wanted to share it with you. Matt Walsh, liberals, this is very simple. You lost because Hillary Clinton is objectively terrible. Ding dong, the witch is dead. I woke up humming that little ditty for some reason. Leftists, on the other hand, appear to have gotten no sleep at all. They've been wide awake since last night, rending their garments and screaming that literally Hitler was just elected. He's not a legitimate president, they say. Racism and sexism and Islamophobia have won. The planet is doomed. This is a national day of mourning. Woe is me. It's the new 9/11. The streets are flooding with the tears of pop stars. Quick, stockpile birth control before he comes and steals it. The walls are closing in. It's getting so dark. Dear God. What is happening? Why me? Why me? The end is nigh. I'm so cold, so alone, so scared. Everyone panic. So, at this point, I've got to interject. I don't think very many of the progressives are actually going to cry out to God. Most of them don't believe in God. Anyway, Matt continues. Christian man, so I should not find the pain and suffering of my fellow citizens so delightful. But I admit that I cannot help myself. God, forgive me. Perhaps if they'd run someone halfway decent and at least partially law-abiding against Donald Trump, I'd have a bit more sympathy. But they didn't. They nominated Hillary Clinton, the worst presidential candidate in the history of the United States. And so they lost. And I must admit, I find it immensely satisfying. Even more satisfying when I remember that some of the most irritating celebrities in Hollywood have pledged to flee to Canada if Trump wins. Sorry, Kel. I hope they don't actually come to Canada for your benefit. Well, Amy Schumer, time to start packing. I hear Saskatchewan is lovely in the winter. And don't forget to bring a coat. But rather than sit here and gloat over the end of the Clinton dynasty, assuming the Democrats don't give Chelsea a try in 2020, and I certainly wouldn't put that past them, I'd like to be more productive. Leftist, I'm going to try to help you sort through things and make sense of what just occurred. You feel quite sure that Trump's election was the result of sexism, racism, ethnocentrism, and all the other isms, along with Islamophobia, homophobia, xenophobia, arachnophobia, and all the other phobias. But as comfortable as that delusion might be, it will only make your situation worse if you indulge it. Your loss, in fact, had nothing to do with isms and phobias and everything to do with the following three factors. Number one, you nominated a corrupt, deceitful, detestable crook who was the subject of at least two active FBI investigations. This, it turns out, was not the most effective strategy. It seems that the American people are rather hesitant to elect a woman who both looks and acts like a shadowy dictator in every dystopian young adult novel ever written. When given a choice between a character from reality TV or a villain from The Hunger Games, the American people chose the former. Rather than lecture them over it, perhaps you should look deep within your hearts and figure out why you put the fate of your party in the hands of President Snow. You should have risen up and purged the Clinton disease from your system years ago. You can say that Republican voters have really rolled the dice on one hell of a wild card here, but at least they've demonstrated yet again that they have very little tolerance for leaders who fail them. That's why you always hear about the infighting and various civil wars happening within the GOP, and why you will continue to hear about them, because we on the right do not play follow the leader very well. We are very skeptical of our political representatives, and I will be encouraging conservatives to remain vigilant and skeptical. And yes, that skepticism creates tension and a bit of chaos, but at least we don't end up with an actual crime family hijacking our movement for 30 years. Hillary Clinton is truly terrible. You couldn't see it because your tribal mentality tells you that any criticism of your leaders must be the result of bigotry towards whatever demographic they belong to. But it had nothing to do with her demographics, nothing to do with her chromosomes or her genitalia. Stop being ridiculous, leftist. Do you really think conservatives hate women? Half of us are women, you fools. You don't have to hate all women in order to despise the worst woman to ever emerge on the American political scene. And she is the worst, I'm afraid to say. Everybody can see it but you. And I think maybe you can actually see it. That's why you didn't turn out for her the way the pollsters thought you would. The way you thought you would. Because she's awful and she deserved to lose, and so she did lose. It's really as simple as that. Factor number two, white working class Americans are tired of being scolded and lectured. In recent years, you fully embraced the mantra that all white people are inherently racist. It became such a mainstream leftist idea that even Hillary Clinton publicly professed it. Well, it turns out that white people don't like being called racist every second of the day. It seems that guilt, shame, and self-loathing are not the best ways to generate electoral turnout. Evidently, repent, you bigots, is not the most effective rallying cry. On a related note, it's not true that all white people are racist. Of course it isn't true. Again, stop being ridiculous. You can't take some random sin or vice and assign it to an entire group of people based solely on their skin color. In fact, do you know what it's called when you accuse everyone of a certain racial group of possessing some negative characteristic? Racism, by definition. In similar fashion, straight white men specifically are tired of being called sexist just because we're men. And we're tired of being called homophobic just because we're straight. And we're tired of being told about our supposed privilege, especially by metropolitan liberals and snarky college kids. You should take note of the fact that Trump is now the president-elect because he won in places like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Michigan. If you've ever been to a small rural county in those states, and you probably haven't, which is part of the problem, you may notice a startling lack of this alleged privilege. There are blue-collar folks who work for a living and have very little, if anything, left over after all the bills are paid. And when a truck driver or a construction worker from Northeast Pennsylvania hears some bratty, self-righteous college girl inform him of his privilege, he tends to roll his eyes and ignore everything else she says. You're a privileged, racist Neanderthal. Now, here's who you should vote for. He didn't hear that second sentence. He heard the first part and tuned the rest out. Justifiably so. Most of you know nothing of the lives of these privileged and racist folks in small town America. And until you get a clue, you're destined to keep losing. And the third, number three, your policies don't work. Most of your policies have proven disastrous, but let's just focus on the big one for right now, that being Obamacare. It's collapsing. We told you it would collapse. We told you it wouldn't work. It can't work. You didn't listen. And now you're suffering because of it. We're all suffering because of it. People across the country are in a true state of panic because their premiums are skyrocketing. Healthcare has never been cheap, but for a lot of people, it's worse now than it's ever been. It's no use trying to tell them why it's actually good that they can no longer afford health insurance for themselves and their families. You can write all the Vox explainers you want, but the average American only has to make one calculation. I could afford health insurance before Obamacare. Now I can't. All the blog posts in all the world won't make that fact more palatable. Failure can't be made to look like success when the failure is being felt by real people. Quote, I know I just shot you in the leg, but please read this article on the Huffington Post, which explains why the gaping bloody wound in your shin doesn't actually hurt, end quote. That's a tough case to make, leftists. Maybe if you're clever enough and you're talking to someone who's gullible enough, you can convince him that a gunshot wound won't hurt. But once you've pulled the trigger, the jig is up. The secret's out. Your explanations, easy for me to say, and rationalizations are now officially worthless. I think part of your problem is that the liberal coalition consists largely, not entirely, but largely, of people who don't really understand what it means to work for a living and pay their own way and feel the pain of the average middle-class American. You've got the elite metropolitan liberals who have enough money that they don't have to worry much about these things. You've got the college liberals and millennial liberals who have spent all or most of their adult life in school, often depending on the charity of their parents. And you've got a lot of Democrat voters in these cities who live relatively close to the elite metropolitan liberals, but under much harsher conditions and often depend completely or at least mostly on government programs. Where is your coalition of people who work 9 to 5? are not wealthy, but do not depend on government handouts. You need those voices in your ranks to talk some sense into you. But all you've done is push them away and scream effectively at them. And now they're gone. And that's why you lost, leftist. It's your own fault. It's on you. Own it now. Or continue your march into irrelevance. Irrelevancy. I should not be having trouble saying irrelevancy. Anyway, the choice is yours. And that is the entirety of the Matt Walsh piece. And it hits the mark. You know, he hits it with his little snarky style. I mean, and I like Matt Walsh. I like him a lot. I like reading his stuff. He's not quite as good on the podcast as he is reading. And I have listened to his podcast a few times. He's a true voice of conservative reason that exists right on the cusp of the millennial generation. It's actually pretty good to know that there are still some people instant amongst the millennials that are exceptions to the millennial rules that seem to be popping up. Checking back in on the chat room, I see Kel mentioned that Glenn Beck has a certain je ne sais quoi. Mary, of course, said that his principles change too often. You know, I don't know if that's the case necessarily. I don't think it's his principles that change. I'm just, again, talking about Glenn and not meaning to disagree with you. But I don't know that it's his principles that change as much as how he thinks he needs to stand up for them kind of changes from time to time. Of course, Kel says that they're actually guarding the Canadian border with polar bears. I actually posted something. Had a front jersey looking guy with a rifle riding a giant bull moose, and claimed it was the Canadian border guard trying to prevent illegal Americans from crossing. This is almost funny to a point. But at the same time, we can have some fun now. We can enjoy the fact that Hillary didn't win, and thank goodness Hillary didn't win. For those of you that participated in the process and did so with honor and distinction, regardless of who you supported, again, kudos for being a part of what makes this nation great. I mean, I'm rarely as proud of this country as I am on election days. Even if the results are disappointing, I greatly, greatly enjoy the thrill of being part of a process that allows us to have a change of power that doesn't involve violence. Mary says she did her part. She stayed up till 3. I couldn't make it till 3 last night, Mary. I dozed off about 1:30. They hadn't quite called Michigan yet, and that was really what I was hoping that would be next, because that would have been the 16 that Donald was needing at that point. It's like, please don't let me fall asleep with Trump ahead and then Hillary come from behind. But, I feel strangely optimistic today. And I've had concerns about Donald for a while. Now, he would not have been my first choice, but I was never part of the Never Trump cloud. And, you know, when it came right down to it, I gave a ton of Trump supporters plenty of airtime as guests on the show. So, I mean, I was never against him. I have concerns. I know where he came from. I know what kind of business he's done and where he's been doing the business. I know he's made lots of contributions to Democrats over the years, but I also know that that's par for the course for his kind of business where he was doing business. It's not like he had a lot of choices. At the end of the day, though, Donald won. Hillary didn't. So I feel optimistic. I feel like, you know, there's going to be some of these protests early. There's going to be some folks that are calling for impeachment. How do I know that? Because some already have. But I do feel like that will settle down. I do feel like there is still hope for the future and that we can get back on the right track, especially if Mike Pence can reach out and do the job of a vice president. Sorry, I got to chuckle. Mary in the chat room, she's explaining why Hillary lost. She said, I think there just wasn't enough fraud. And obviously it wasn't. I mean, there were several reported cases, several documentations of machines, voting machines that were not functioning properly. I think at the end of the day, though, what it came down to is you can't borrow swagger. And Hillary Clinton has no swagger. I never got a chance to talk about it much because I had taken a couple of Wednesday nights off and I really didn't think I was going to be doing very many Wednesdays for a while. Of course, this being the night after the election, I had to get on tonight. I couldn't keep myself to myself tonight. And turns out I'll probably be doing some more Wednesday. I'm thinking about changing the time slot permanently to a 7 to 9, which is a little more user-friendly, I think, for people here under my roof. But, I continue to see, the despite the fraud, I think what really came down is just a lot of people on the Democratic side couldn't bring themselves to vote for her. They were never excited about Hillary Clinton. They weren't. If the Democratic voter in mass, or even the party itself, was really excited about Hillary Clinton, there's no way that Barack Hussein Alu Akbar Obama could have upended her in the 2008 primary. There just wasn't any Democratic excitement. And, you know, one of the sadder points of this particular election was a lot of people who were really genuinely excited about going to the polls. Not all. I mean, there were plenty of Trump train, ready to rock and roll folks. But a lot of the people that went to the polls that were excited to go vote were excited to vote against the other person, not so much vote for this person. I do want to give a special shout out to the state of Utah. Hillary Clinton did not even finish second in Utah. Now, that tells me a lot. I mean, I know Evan is from Utah. He's got much more ties there. The Mormon church was strong behind him, and, you know, for good reason. And to tell you the truth, I did legitimately consider voting for Evan McMullen myself. I think I may have told this audience this before. I really did think about it. First and foremost, because I know that here in Tennessee, I knew that Trump was going to win, period. I mean, there was no question about it. Trump was going to completely trounce Hillary Clinton in the state of Tennessee. I just knew it. So I knew my vote wouldn't hurt. So I thought about voting for the Libertarians just so that they could keep, you know, if they get to a certain percentage, then their party gets to stay on the ballot automatically next go around. That's part of the electoral law here. I know several states have similar laws. I don't know if your particular state has a law like that, but here in Tennessee, we do. So I thought about that, even though Gary Johnson blew my mind most of the season. He sounded way more like a very leftist as opposed to a libertarian. His running mate, and I can't think of his name right now, but his running mate actually sounded more like a libertarian, although he still had a few moments where they sounded pretty leftist, and I couldn't get behind it enough. Then I took a look at Evan McMullen because I would like to have seen somebody get strong enough numbers to send a message to the two parties that, hey, you got to watch out for this. You guys do not have an exclusive hold on the plantations. We have other places we can go. But ultimately, with Evan McMullen, it just came down to, for me, this guy was a CIA operative. He had been in Afghanistan. He had been in Iraq. And he still seemed to be confused about how the Muslim Brotherhood in some places was bad, but in other places, they're really kind of good. So that means, quite simply, one of two things. Either Evan McMullen is tragically naive about the Muslim Brotherhood, or he is truly one of these CIA operatives, intel people, who believes still, even after the multiple failures that we've seen policy-wise, that we can use people like that to acquire our own short-term goals. Does Osama bin Laden mean anything to anyone? Hey, we don't like the Soviets being in Afghanistan. Let's train somebody to arm a rebel terrorist group, and they'll fight a proxy war against the Soviets for us. Short-term goals achieved. Long-term goals, Thanks, Mary. Mary's giving me the 15-minute countdown in the chat room. Kel pointed out that a lot of places ended up using paper ballots, too. And you're right, more paper ballots were used this election cycle than in the last three combined, due largely to the fact that a lot of machines that were being used in multiple locations failed completely. So a lot of places didn't have much of a choice but to go to the paper ballot backups. And it's a whole lot harder to fake those, especially on short notice. Despite an unusual level of early voting this particular cycle, which I'm not a big fan of the early voting, although I have to admit the convenience of it is nice. I'm not a big fan of it, because if there is some shady conspiracy going on to steal an election, it seems a lot easier to steal those early votes and give them more time to mess with them than it is to just do it on election night when you know the whole world's watching and they're expecting you to call a race in some states as little as 5 minutes after the polls close. So yeah, there was a lot more paper ballots used this time than we're accustomed to seeing. And that probably did play a bigger role than most people realize. So that's actually a very astute observation, Kel. Good job. You get an A and a gold star for today. Of course, Mary, you get a gold star every day, so don't feel like you're being left out. And it's still just, it's amazing to me, because part of it still feels surreal. Because I had a really nervous feeling going into, and I was afraid that Hillary would find a way to steal this thing, and it really did my heart good to see Florida and North Carolina and Ohio and Wisconsin and Michigan and to stand up and say, no, we know you, Hillary, you're not what this country needs. And even if they weren't willing to come out and say you're a criminal and you're everything else that's wrong with America, you may be right, Mary. But I tell you, I'm one of those people that was more concerned about Hillary not winning. To me, in my mind, Hillary was just such a dangerous person. Do you know they made such a big deal about stock trading going crazy during the reporting of the results last night? But stocks kind of shot up before the end of the day today. That drop was largely in part of because they expected Hillary to win. And then Hillary wasn't winning. And, you know, that uncertainty always negatively affects the stock for a little while. usually something like that is a really good buying opportunity if you're an investor. If you're not, don't worry about it. It didn't affect you, not in any real way. Mary makes a pretty good point in saying that that uneasy feeling was because Trump won. We don't really know what to expect from him. And at the end of the day, I can't argue against it. And yeah, I guess, you know, Mary's expressing what I have expressed multiple times. We really don't. You know, like I said earlier, I'm ever so hopeful that I hope that he proves me wrong for ever having questioned and been concerned about it. I hope he gets in there and not only does everything that he said he would do, or maybe not everything he said he'd do. There's a few things he probably shouldn't. But I do hope that the established Republicans and the rest of the Republican parties will work with him, and that that Harry Reid will get over his little temper tantrum. Because, sorry, Harry, Judge Garland is not going to get an up or down vote. Now stop being an obstructionist and do your job as a senator. Sorry. How much longer till Harry Reid actually retires? Come on. Nevada, what are you guys thinking? Why do you keep reelecting him? Come on. Seriously. Okay. All right. We're roaming into the last few minutes of the show. So I guess it's time to meander a few final thoughts. I expressed my personal prayers for what I think is needed. And so if any of you guys missed that, check out the show in archives. Unfortunately, the audio was a little choppy earlier. Mary let me know, but I think it's been better since then. Everything was green-lit on this end, so I don't know what the problem was. Probably just more BTR stuff. Maybe they were throwing a tantrum when they saw the title of today's show. I don't know. But here's the thing. Final thoughts today is sun came up. Nothing's really changed. This isn't official until the Electoral College makes it official. And Trump doesn't move from president-elect to president until the inauguration near the end of July. July, well, that's a long way to wait. Near the end of January. I'm just trying to skip ahead to summer. That's what I'm trying. Yes, January 20th. Mary always giving the precise facts. I actually knew that, believe it or not. I had that conversation with some folks earlier today, too. Sometimes I leave out details because I don't want to sound like an annoying know-it-all. Anyway. Cal, it's okay to be late. I actually started early, earlier tonight. I had been doing the 8 to 10 thing, and tonight doing the 7 to 9, and I think 7 to 9 will be, of course I knew it. Oh, okay, Mary, okay. Well, seriously, I did, really. And as far as trying to get back to my final thoughts today, at this point, nothing's changed, and we really don't know how much is going to. What we do know is that this nation has a chance of surviving a little longer now. This nation has a chance of pulling together. It may not be easy. Because we got a lot of damage to try to undo that's been perpetrated, not just by Barack Hussein, Allahu Akbar, Obama, and his minions, but by a long stream of so-called progressives who have pushed hard to try and completely destroy our Constitution and take as much control of our daily lives as they can. And they've been working on that for a long time now. There's a good conversation going on. If you guys are listening to the show, if you're catching it to podcast later, you really need to join in live and hop in this chat room, because the chat room is usually way better than the show is. It's always great. I love the conversation there, especially with Mary and Cal and Larry and when Bigfoot pops into, and when a lot of the folks that pop in fairly regular, great conversations get going. And sometimes it has absolutely nothing at all to do with the show topics, and that's awesome too. I love it. But it's also great to have that interaction. And that's the kind of interaction that we need more of. But we're going to have to reach out and we're going to have to start teaching. I know I've said multiple times that it is our job as conservatives, everyday average Americans, to educate our friends, families, and neighbors on why conservatism works better and how it works better and how to start thinking critically when we have some, obviously, some folks we're never going to reach, especially some family members. We know this. But when it comes to folks that we can help along the way, we need to. But I think we might need to shift some of that focus. The time has come for us to start reaching out to millennials to help educate them as along the ways of how capitalism is a good thing and not an evil thing, how capitalism is single-handedly responsible for more wealth in this world than any other system ever has, and how their utopian dream of a socialist society is never going to turn out well, and show them why. By now, you guys have heard the report that came out that stated that modern millennials in this country now believe that more people died because of George W. Bush than of St. Tao. You know, I wish it was that simple. Mary in the chat room says, no capitalism, no iPods. And, you know, Apple is a great example. All the little toys, their iPhones, their iPods, their iPads, all that stuff that they absolutely love, couldn't have any of it without capitalism, because the fine folks, Steve Jobs and company, they weren't there to donate their time, money, and effort. They were there to make a profit. Capitalism is a really good incentive. But like Matt Walsh pointed out in the piece that he wrote that I read earlier, a lot of these folks, they've never been in the situation where they're responsible for taking care of themselves, which is why little crappy jobs are good enough for them. And then they expect those little crappy jobs to pay them $15 an hour. So we need to refocus our education, our educational outreach. That's our homework from the Tap Into the Truth Show, to trying to get these millennials to understand that capitalism is not the enemy, it's the friend. And yes, Mary, I did know it was January 20th. I promise. All right, that's going to have to be it for today, folks. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I appreciate you. A special shout out to everybody in the chat room. Mary, Kel, Shadow Warrior, Larry from the Prime Directive, and guest number 793. This, of course, is the last 90 seconds of the show, so I'm going to bid you all a fair and fond adieu. Remember, Sunday, be back on the air at 3. Going to be joined at the top of the show by John Lofgren, and we'll be talking about some of his predictions and the aftermath from the election. And in the meanwhile, remember, don't take my word for it. Definitely. Be prepared to put in a little bit of your own effort, put some time in, put in some work, because that's what you're really going to have to do if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it. See you on the radio Sunday. God bless. Open up.
Thank you.